From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018. And on this day, we'll hear about what the candidates for governor had to say at a breakfast forum this morning. And in our series on the future of aquaculture in Maine, we'll meet a woman who is taking one of Maine's most lucrative export products, baby eels, and growing them at home. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light. Tickets available at mainegardens.org.
The four candidates in Maine's race for governor offered up their views on the economy, the workforce, and education today during a forum hosted by the Portland Regional Chamber of Commerce. The sold-out event drew a crowd of local civic and business leaders, as well as the attention of political observers waiting for the relatively low-key contest to increase in intensity. Steve Missler has more.
The race to see who will succeed term-limited Republican Governor Paul LePage has been decidedly different than the one that took place 4 years ago. Unlike then, Democrat Janet Mills, Republican Sean Moody, and Independents Terry Hayes and Alan Caron have rarely engaged with one another publicly. Mills and Moody, who most recent polls have shown as deadlocked, have generally let the political ads blanketing the airwaves and internet do the dirty work of attacking one another. Wednesday's forum at Portland's Holiday Inn by the Bay was no different. The exchanges between them were never direct, almost subtle.
When it comes to cutting a business deal or any other deal on the part of the state of Maine, I will be true to my word.
Mills was responding to a question about whether Maine was a state that welcomes business growth. But instead of attacking Moody, Mills focused on the man he appears to emulate, LePage. She criticized LePage for refusing to authorize voter-approved bonds and for chasing away an offshore wind deal that supporters said would create jobs.
I won't pull the rug out from under business deals, as we have seen in the last few years. I will not sit on bonds that the majority of the people, 60-70% of the people, have voted on and the legislature has supported by two-thirds votes.
Mills' campaign hopes that tying Moody to LePage's controversial decisions will give voters second thoughts about supporting what she's described as the status quo. Moody, meanwhile, has continued to beat the drum that a businessman, an outsider, is what's needed in the governor's mansion. The founder and owner of a chain of auto body repair shops repeatedly defended the LePage administration and a gloomy jobs forecast by the Maine Department of Labor that's projecting nearly zero growth over the next 8 years. And he also defended himself against this attack from Better Maine, a group funded by the Maine Education Association and a triumvirate of progressive mega donors.
Can we afford to put Sean Moody in charge of our schools?
They're overfunded.
Sean Moody would be a disaster for Maine schools.
The ad uses a remark Moody made during the Republican primary, in which he says Maine's public schools are overfunded. But Moody told the audience on Wednesday that it's misleading. He says Maine's schools need to be efficient and effective. And while he wasn't entirely clear what he would do to achieve those goals, he said the political arm of the teachers union was afraid of the change that he would bring.
I mean, they're scared to death to have somebody like me, an outsider, come in and do the real reform that K-12 education desperately needs. The teachers are overworked, they're stressed out, nobody's listening to them, they have way too much administrative work and too much bureaucracy pushing down on them. They need help, and I'm coming to the rescue.
While the focus of the race has been on Mills and Moody, the two independents are trying to gain momentum. Terry Hayes, a former Democrat, hit familiar notes. She says change will only come if voters elect someone outside the two major political parties, which she says are so engaged in partisan battles that the state's opioid crisis has continued to flourish.
Politics have become about keeping score and tit for tat and ruling by press release instead of actually focused on the problem. So I want to be focused on the problem.
Independent Alan Caron also blamed Democrats and Republicans for the state's lack of economic vision. When asked if the state was open for business, Caron argued that every state is, but that Maine is stuck lurching between Democrats pushing one set of stale policies and Republicans pushing another.
We always talk about doing the things that every other state is doing as though that's an economic strategy. It isn't. A strategy would look at what we have uniquely as assets, what we can do.
The candidates' remarks during Wednesday's forum were consistent with what they've been sounding for several months. With about a month to go before Election Day and no recent public polling, it's hard to know which of those messages will most resonate with Maine voters. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
In the race for the 1st Congressional District in Maine, the three candidates are facing off over defense spending, and in particular, incumbent Democrat Shelley Pingree's voting record. Mal Leary explains.
Independent Marty Grohman, a former Democrat from Biddeford, held a news conference on a dock sticking out into the Kennebec River, just south of Bath Iron Works. He charged that Pingree has jeopardized jobs at BIW and the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard in Kittery because of her opposition to recent National Defense Authorization Acts. And he says workers at BIW are worried.
Wondering about how you're making your mortgage payment and wondering if your representative in Congress is going to back you up by supporting the National Defense Authorization Act. When I'm down there in Congress, you won't ever have to worry about that.
But Pingree says Grohman doesn't understand the workings of the federal budget process. She says she has worked hard for funding in the actual budget bills for both warship construction at BIW and the expansion of Portsmouth to handle the overhaul of more submarines.
It's really just a political statement, and frankly, funding for shipbuilding in Maine is far more complicated than that.
Pingree says Grohman does not understand the interaction between the congressional committees that authorize defense spending measures and the Appropriations Committee. Somewhat surprisingly, her Republican opponent, Mark Holbrook, sides with Pingree. He says Grohman appears not to have a grasp on the process. But Holbrook is also critical of Pingree's appropriations votes and says she hasn't supported additional funding for defense programs.
She could be doing a lot more. She has been in a position to create the conditions where southern Maine could flourish, and she's not done a thing.
Pingree defends her record on the issue. She says that as a member of the Appropriations Committee, she has to weigh all federal government programs and balance needs. She says some constituents believe that she has supported too much military spending.
We have greatly increased our defense spending, and frankly, I hear from a lot of people who have concerns about the amount of money that we spend on defense and the overall picture of this funding, including the spending that we've had on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
The three are scheduled to participate in debates through the rest of the month, and it's clear that defense spending will likely be a key issue in the race. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Many Mainers are familiar with the state's lucrative fishery for transparent glass eels, or elvers. They can fetch thousands of dollars a pound when they're shipped to Japan, China, or other Asian countries where they're grown to market size. Now, one Maine entrepreneur wants to add the value herself, growing eels to full size here in what appears to be a first for the U.S. In our series, Aquaculture's Next Wave, Fred Bever reports on that startup, American Unagi, and how it's showing early signs of success.
When the elver season opens each spring, Maine fisherman Justin Jordan likes to try one out.
I eat the first elver that I catch every year, just for good luck for the season. It's a little slimy and it's a little salty like the water, but it doesn't taste like much because they're so small.
Sushi lovers will tell you that full-grown eels, called unagi, are pretty tasty. That's why Sarah Rademacher started growing eels a few years ago in her Thomaston basement.
So it was like dingy stones, you know, dirt floor, and a glorified large aquarium with a couple of tanks. And also we had butchered a pig, so that was hanging. It was quite the scene, with like an exposed light bulb.
The scene today is a little less macabre. Last month, Rademacher took over this indoor recirculating aquaculture system at a University of Maine research center on the Mount Desert Narrows in Franklin. It's a small warehouse with rows of shoulder-high circular green tanks, pumps, and hoses, plus some proprietary technology Rademacher is developing. The tanks brim with wriggling eels, some pencil-thin, some fat as cigars.
We've got thousands in this tank. Thousands of fat little eels.
eels are actually fish with fins and gills.
If you look close, they almost have little puppy dog eyes and a little smile with the way their jaw is shaped.
Rademacher drops in a pinch of microalgae and fish meal. She says the right feed is essential to the flavor and protein content that will make them marketable and happy.
That's a sign of a happy eel. When they swarm and feed really excitedly, almost splashing the water.
These eels, like all Anguilla rostrata, started out in the Sargasso Sea off Bermuda.
They spawn there, and then those larval eels, when they hatch, they just drift on the currents. So again, they don't know if they're gonna land in the Caribbean or Canada.
Or in a fisherman's net at the mouth of a river in Maine. Wild eel populations are under stress worldwide, and many countries are restricting harvests. But Rademacher recently won federal permission for Maine's Elver fishermen to exceed their annual quota by 200 pounds, which she will raise to maturity. She hopes to sell 20,000 pounds this year. The question is, who will eat all that American unagi?
Wait a few minutes now.
The patrons of Sammy's Deluxe Restaurant in downtown Rockland, for one. Owner and chef Sam Richmond doesn't serve it up sushi style, though. Instead, he smokes it European style.
It honestly winds up tasting not dissimilar to a mild kielbasa or a mild bacon. It's really juicy.
Richmond says customers are intrigued.
Because of the really great story of American unagi, and everybody's familiar with Elvers and the value of that fishery, so it's sort of, people know about them but haven't really eaten them, so I think they're eager to give it a try.
They'll be joining a growing world population that's hungry for more and more seafood and increasingly able to pay for it. And in the U.S., domestic supply is nowhere near meeting demand.
I mean, we already import about 90% of our seafood. 90%.
James Anderson directs the Institute for Sustainable Food Systems at the University of Florida, and he's a former advisor to the World Bank. He says the U.S. needs to step up its efforts to bring aquaculture back home.
Our marine aquaculture has made a lot of technical innovations. In states like Maine, there's been a lot of progress. But elsewhere, it's been almost no growth, and we just have chosen as a nation to depend on imports.
Back in Franklin, Rademacher is doing her part to change the equation and trying to capture some of the value that's right now going abroad. She's already lined up investors for a full-scale commercial facility in the Midcoast.
That's our goal. This is a stepping stone to our commercial production. We're planning on being online next year.
She says she can boost output more than tenfold, selling more than 250,000 pounds of eel in the U.S. next year, at as much as $25 a pound. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.